Hello and welcome to The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, where we explore the culinary arts in and around the greater Lehigh Valley. I'm Mike Drabenstadt, your host for our gastronomic tour of our region's amazing food scene. I'm here with Carrie Scripp from Clover Hill Winery in Brining'sville. Carrie, welcome to The Inside Dish.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Clover Hill's a family business that traces its roots figuratively and literally back four decades to 1970. Can you tell us how Clover Hill came to be?
Yeah, so my parents started the idea of a winery. They purchased the property where Clover Hill is now on auction back in 76, and they decided they were going to build their house there as well as do something agricultural with the property. They initially talked about growing Christmas trees and planting potatoes on the property, but fortunate for me, they ended up growing grapes there. The whole idea of grape growing was really spurred by, they read an in-flight magazine talking about the success of grape growing on the East Coast, and they decided that they would plant grapes and try their hand at that.
Otherwise, you could have been talking about French fries and spuds,
that's right. or vodka.
That's true.
But so they started growing grapes as a hobby. And at the time, my dad owned a construction company. 1985, they decided that my dad was going to sell his construction company and they were going to take a leap of faith and open up a winery. Their first year of business in September of 1985, they produced just over 2,000 gallons of wine. And today, if you fast forward to where we are now, we're producing about 80,000 gallons of wine a year.
Wow.
So it's grown considerably over the years.
Yeah. And you're the second generation?
I am. My brother and I both came into the business. There's three kids, and two of the three decided to come in. My sister, we say she's the smartest because she gets all of her wine for free, but she doesn't actually have to work there. So, but my brother and I came into the business. My brother studied out in California. He studied oenology at Fresno State, which is the study of winemaking. And he's been home in the business now for 25 years.
Okay.
I studied down under at the University of Adelaide. I studied wine marketing, and I've been home in the business for 18 years.
So how did the transition go from the first generation to the second? Sometimes it goes easy, sometimes not so much, but it sounds like it's going well.
It is going well. My parents are still involved in the business. They say they're retired. However, they're not. They're there 7 days a week. But they have kind of taken a backseat, and my brother and I are pretty much running the day-to-day part of the business. We still work together as a family on the goals and the future of Clover Hill, though.
So we're looking at more than 40 years of grape growing and winemaking up there. Mm-hmm. How has winemaking in the Lehigh Valley evolved over that time?
There has been so much growth in the Lehigh Valley and Pennsylvania and the whole East Coast for winemaking. When my parents first started out, they really started with the school of hard knocks. They learned by trial and error, whereas my brother and I, my parents encouraged both of us to go and get formal education before we came back into the business, which really helped us to grow. But now in the Lehigh Valley and across the state of Pennsylvania, we see so many more wineries opening up, which is good and bad. We don't want the market to be oversaturated, but it does sort of bring on this whole new wine culture in the area. And it's great to help growth and great for people to go and enjoy more wine.
Let's talk a little bit about the wines you produce then. I know you have a variety of reds and whites and other things too.
Yeah. Our goal has always been to produce a wide range of wines. There are certain grapes and wine styles that we think are really well suited to the area, but we've always tried to do some drier wines, sweeter wines, so that we cover a broad range of tastes. Some things that are special and we're extremely fond of growing and producing in the area. There's a white grape called Vidal Blanc that we love to grow, and we make a few different styles from that grape. Riesling is a grape variety that's very well suited to our climate. You see a lot of the wineries in the area grow it, and we grow quite a bit of it, and we also make a couple different wine styles from that, and we love that grape. On the red side, there's a grape Chambrecin, which is a hybrid grape variety. But again, it's very well suited to our climate, and it grows exceptionally well around here, even if you have a colder or wetter season. And one of my favorites, Pinot Noir, that grape, it can be one of the fussiest grapes, no matter where it's grown. However, when it does do very well in our climate, so that's a grape that we're excited about, too.
Well, and a lot of people might be familiar with the vineyard right there in Brining'sville up on the hill, but that's not your only location. When you have 80,000 gallons a year, It's definitely spread across the valley.
Yeah. So our main location is in Briningsville, and that's where that was the original property that my parents started with, and one of six vineyards that we own and operate. The other vineyards that we have are between both Lehigh and Berks County. And then we also have four retail stores, two in Lehigh and two in Berks County.
And one in the Allentown Farmers Market.
One in the Allentown Farmers Market.
I see every week.
Yes. Great place to shop for your wine and food.
So I know we said that you've been growing grapes, your family, for 40 years. How long are grape vines viable? What do you need to do to maintain them? Do you need to replant? Talk a little bit about what needs to be done to make sure those grapes can produce good wine for
sure.
you.
So when we start a vineyard, we look at a number of things before we even put any grapes in the ground. We look at our soil composition, our drainage, where the frost will hit on a specific hillside, and we'll sort of decide what variety will grow best on that tract of land, because it's very specific. What grows well on one property may not grow well on another property. So we do a lot of research in advance to find the perfect fit. Then we start putting grapes in the ground. We'll use seedlings. And the seedlings, it takes about 3 to 5 years for them to kind of get their root system in place. And we work on the trellising to get them growing up properly out of the ground. 3 to 5 years, if it does produce any fruit, we cut it off and discard it because we want all the energy to go into the plant itself. About 5 to 7 years, we start yielding a little bit of fruit from that grape variety. And then 7 to 15 years is when you start to maximize a grape variety.
You must be a very patient person.
Yeah, I'm not. And then we plan on the East Coast, depending on how our winters are, we plan on the lifespan of a grapevine to last us 30, 40 years. At that point, the grapevine begins to deteriorate, doesn't produce nearly as much fruit, and we start to consider, should we replant or should we let it go a little bit longer? So it's a slow process from the time you put a grapevine into the ground till you actually get any fruit and then wine as a result from it.
In addition to what you talked about with frost and soil and everything, I know that Mother Nature has been throwing some other interesting things your way with the weather and climate change, and also with a little invader that we've had recently. So let's talk first about the weather and what sort of effect warmer temperatures are having on winemaking.
Every year, you know, we get thrown a different deck of cards as far as what Mother Nature gives us, and we sort of react to it as best we can. The past few years, we've had wetter than normal years, and in general, the grapes like very dry feet. That's why most of the time you see them grown on the hillsides, because they like well-drained soils. This past year was a real challenge for us. It was probably the most wet year that we've ever had on record, and also one of our most difficult harvests as a result. We had rain almost every day from the middle of July on, and that's really challenging to get the fruit ripe as well as to get in there and harvest your fruit. So we had a lot of challenges. If I could pick my weather forecast for this year, I'd like to see some rain in the springtime. That gives the vines a nice good base to work with. Mid to late summer, we prefer things to dry out because that's when the fruit is forming and ripening on the vines. And then September and October is when we harvest, and we would prefer beautiful, warm, sunny days then.
We'll be pulling for you.
Thank you. Can you talk to somebody for me?
I'll do my best.
Good.
And then we've had a an invasive creature come to this area the last year or two, the spotted lantern fly. Do we know what effect it's having or what effect it might have on vineyards and other producers?
The spotted lantern fly, unfortunately, can be very damaging to grapevines. And for the past 2 years, we have seen them in our vineyards. 2 years ago, we saw a little population of lantern flies. This past year, we saw a pretty big population of lantern flies. They will bore into the trunks and the arms of the grapevines, and then result will be the grapevines will sap, and eventually they can kill the grapevine. We haven't seen any vines die off at this point from them, but we, like I said, we have seen the population in our vineyards. At this point, there's not a whole lot we can do to protect against the lantern fly. We're just trying to monitor and stay aware of the research that's going on. They have done a fair amount of damage, especially in China, to the grape growing industry. So I'm hoping that they'll find a solution or something that we can do to suppress the population of the lantern fly.
Well, I know there's been money put toward it last year. I think Penn State's working on it and other people that hopefully we can come up with a way to mitigate.
Yeah, there's a lot of research going on right now. We've had Department of Ag and Penn State in our vineyards for at least the past 5 years trying to see what's going on, as well as many other vineyards in the area. They're monitoring the populations. They're doing their research. So I do hope we come up with some sort of solution. Like I said, we haven't seen any vines die off from the lanternfly. We won't know the result of this past year's damage until the spring of this coming year. So we'll see if there's any change there.
And we were talking earlier about another Mother Nature's friends coming to visit your vineyard in Leonardsville, a bear who likes Pinot Noir, right?
Yes, we deal with all sorts of critters out there. My house is one of our vineyards, and I live out in Leonardsville. And we have a resident black bear who is very fond of the Pinot Noir. He hasn't been too much of a nuisance, and he's quite pretty to see out there in the vineyard. But they can do quite a bit of damage very quickly, so we keep our eye on him. But in the meantime, we just like to take pictures of him when he's out there.
And as long as he doesn't call his friends in for
tasting
party,
right?
So along with the change in Mother Nature, there also have been changes in Harrisburg. So what's been happening there in Harrisburg, and how is that impacting wine production and sales here in Pennsylvania?
Sure. Pennsylvania has changed so much, especially in the past 3 years. The liquor code has been virtually rewritten and allowed a lot of new opportunity for wine and alcohol sales in the state of Pennsylvania. Most notably, now you can purchase wine in the grocery stores and in convenience stores. That has changed our landscape of how we sell wine. In the past, if you were in Pennsylvania, the only place you could buy wine is either at the state store or at a Pennsylvania winery. Now you've got a whole collection of places that you can go and visit and purchase wines, not just Pennsylvania wines, but wines from all over the world. So it's opened up a lot of new opportunity for us. It's also opened up a lot of new challenges with different types of distribution that we're working on.
It seems like at the vineyard, it's a not just a producing vineyard, but you do have areas up there for events. You mentioned Sangria Sunday, as we were talking before. It seems like there is a wine tourism effort that is coming up in the valley, where people are going from winery to winery like they might in Napa.
Yeah, it's a great thing. You know, it's a beautiful area. The vineyards and the wineries allow you an opportunity to go out. You can sit outside. You can enjoy a glass of wine. You can visit for an event, whether it's a tour or a tasting class or a Sangria Sunday. But it's sort of this whole experience. And in my mind, that's what wine's all about. It's not just having your glass of wine. It's really tasting the soil and tasting what's gone into it and enjoying the atmosphere and the whole experience.
And do you find that people are getting into it a little bit more? They're not just coming, oh, let's try this. It's kind of a lark. They're coming in and, a little more serious to get more information about the wine.
Yeah, I would say consumers overall are interested in learning more. And we've always focused on that at Clover Hill, that you can come and engage and talk about how we've grown this grape, how we've made this wine, so that, again, you get more of an experience and a bit of an education while you visit. People are also much more aware of where their food is made and grown, and wine is no different. You know, wine, in my mind, is a food product, and it's something that we start in the vineyard. We grow the grapes, we produce the wine, we sell the wine, so we can tell you the whole story of that bottle of wine.
Well, and we got a little bit of the story here today.
Yeah.
Thanks, Carrie, for joining us here at WDIY.
Great. Thank you for having me.
I'm Mike Drabenstadt, and this is The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon.